Radio Prague News.
5 Czech soldiers were injured on Wednesday in a bomb attack in eastern Afghanistan. Jiří Drahoš and Marek Hilšer, 2 former presidential candidates elected to the upper house of parliament, will join the Senators Club of the Mayors and Independents. And most of the crystal methamphetamine available in Europe is produced in the Czech Republic. A bomb attack in eastern Afghanistan did not target Czech soldiers specifically, but was part of a wider assault on a fleet of coalition vehicles, the Czech General Chief of Staff Aleš Opata said at a press conference on Thursday. 5 Czech soldiers were injured on Wednesday by a car bomb blast while patrolling near Bagram Air Base, the largest US air base in Afghanistan. 4 members of the military personnel suffered minor injuries, while one of them was severely injured and had to undergo several operations. According to Mr. Opata, the soldier is now in a stable condition. In total, 346 Czech soldiers are now serving in Afghanistan as part of NATO's 16,000-strong Resolute Support mission. Jiří Drahoš and Marek Hilšer, 2 former presidential candidates elected to the upper house of parliament, will join the Senators Club of the Mayors and Independents. They announced their decision at a joint press conference on Thursday. With the overall number of senators in the Mayors and Independents increasing to 18, the party is likely to form the largest group in the upper chamber. Traditionally, the party with the largest group of senators gets to nominate the Speaker of the House. Most of the crystal methamphetamine available in Europe is produced in the Czech Republic, suggests a report by Germany's Federal Drug Commissioner Marlene Mortler, which was released on Thursday. According to the annual report, the Czech-produced methamphetamine is mostly consumed in the southern and eastern parts of Germany, which border with the Czech Republic, such as Saxony and Bavaria. Consumption of the drug in western parts of Germany is significantly lower, the report says. Last year, German police recorded more than 1,200 drug offences related to Czech methamphetamine. Paintings by famous pre-war Czech artists such as Josef Čapek, Jan Zrzavý and František Kupka will be auctioned at the Mánes Exhibition Hall in Prague on the 28th of October. The auction will include 3 oil paintings by Toajen, Jindřich Štyrský and Antonín Procházka, which come from a collection by Austrian collector Ivo Rotter and have been exhibited at the National Gallery Belvedere in Vienna on long-term loan. Among other items on sale will be paintings by Antonín Chytusy and Kamil Hoták and a photo by František Drtikol, one of the most important Czech photographers of the 20th century. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Friday is expected to be mostly overcast with occasional rain showers and daytime highs ranging between 14 and 18 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková and you can find more news at radio.cz.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio with me, Tom McEncrow. Coming up in today's programme, the first official visit to Russia by Czech MPs in over a decade took place earlier this week. We also take a look at a new film that recreates the encounter between President Masaryk and writer Karel Čapek. And we meet Silva Šimsová, who recounts her dramatic escape from Czechoslovakia in 1949. All that is coming up, so please stay with us. Bilateral relations with Moscow have been strained since Brussels imposed sweeping sanctions following the Russian occupation and later annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula in 2014. EU individual and corporate sanctions have since been expanded and extended numerous times and are now due to remain in place at least until 15th of March 2019. In the meantime, the Czech government is now moving to establish a normal working relationship. Brian Kennedy looked into the story.
Although Czech President Miloš Zeman paid an official visit to Russia last autumn, accompanied by a 130-strong delegation representing Czech businesses hoping to sign energy and transportation-related contracts, until this very week, it had been more than 10 years since a Czech parliamentarian had visited Russia in an official capacity. Honor Deputy Radek Vondráček, the Speaker of the Lower House of Parliament, returned on Wednesday from Russia, where he discussed the Czech government's position on maintaining the EU sanctions and its commitment to the NATO military alliance with its counterparts in both houses of the Russian parliament. Vondrácek said in an interview with Czech radio that the aim of the visit was to try to improve relations and restore political dialogue, as well as to discuss a range of practical issues affecting Czech businesses with operations in Russia and individual citizens living there.
To, co jsme si předsevzali, tak se podařilo a našli jsme celou řadu.
We succeeded in addressing a wide range of concrete issues, for example within the health and insurance sectors, which need attention, and I fulfilled my main aim to re-establish contact between lawmakers on the official level. It had been more a decade since a Czech MP had been here in that capacity, and no foreign minister has visited Russia in the past 13 years. So the aim was to establish, let's say, standard relations, meaning a political dialogue, because our two states now essentially have none, even though 500,000 Russian tourists come here every year. There are a range of Czech businesses and active investments there, and many Czechs also travel there as tourists. So it would be good to have a standard approach as to how to communicate on matters beneficial to both sides. Germany, for example, maintains relations with Russia on a practical level. That is also our aim.
Vondrácek's visit came just as a new Czech foreign minister was named to the post, vacant for close to 4 months, as President Zeman had refused to nominate the previous candidate of Ano's junior coalition partner, the Social Democrats. Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček, who will outline his policy priorities at a debate Thursday evening, like President Zeman, has called for unity in the country's foreign policy approach. But, unlike Zeman, Petříček supports sanctions against Russia, having called them among the few instruments available to the EU to push Russia to, quote, respect international law. For his part, Vondrácek said that he had discussed EU sanctions with Russian lawmakers, saying it was a difficult conversation, but that no subject should be taboo if the aim is to establish a normal working relationship.
And that was Brian Kennedy with that report. Now, little over a week before the centenary of the establishment of Czechoslovakia, a freshly released film brings the state's founder to the big screen. Talks with T.G. Masaryk reconstructs a single conversation between the so-called father of the nation and writer Karel Čapek, another symbol of the First Republic era. Ian Willoughby has more.
Demokracie znamená, že navazujete vztahy s lidma, protože je máte rád.
At the turn of the 1930s, the great Czech writer Karel Čapek brought out a three-part volume entitled Talks with T.G. Masaryk. Based on interviews with the founder and first president of Czechoslovakia, the collection recorded Masaryk's attitudes to politics, religion and life, and were authorized by their subject. A single 90-minute conversation between these two symbols of Czechoslovakia's First Republic at Slovakia's Topolčianki Castle is the focus of a new film that hit Czech cinema screens on Thursday. The movie, also entitled Talks with T.G. Masaryk, is set in 1928 and shows the president at 78 and the author in his late 30s. It was directed by Jakub Červenka.
I wanted to approach these two major figures of Czech history, not as they appear in history books, where they are placed on pedestals, but more as real people. Their meeting takes place in a gorgeous park in Topolčanki, where Masaryk had a summer residence and where Čapek visited him. As well as holding a clever philosophical dialogue, they also silently looked at the countryside and discussed everyday issues. But there is nothing in the film from the book. It's a newly written psychological drama.
Perhaps best known for his science fiction writing, Karel Čapek, who gave the world the word robot, is played by Jan Buráš in the Two-Hander movie. Masaryk was dubbed the father of the nation and remains the model of a great statesman for many Czechs. He's portrayed, complete with distinctive cap and white beard, by Martin Huba. The veteran Slovak actor outlines the maker's approach.
We didn't try especially hard to create a general depiction of these two historical figures. We weren't at all trying to show him as the father of the nation. He couldn't stand that and didn't agree with it. What we were really interested in is the rich, harmonious inner life of this historical hero. To put it simply, we were trying to map the private life of a historical hero.
Thursday has also seen the publication of a book dedicated to the founder of Czechoslovakia. Jiný Masaryk, or A Different Masaryk, was written by Pavel Kosatík, who also produced the screenplay of the new film. However, Mr. Kosatík says there is no connection between the two projects, with the book being a straightforward biography.
And that was Ian Willoughby with that report. Now, just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it is now time for our main feature of the day. With her father, a pro-Western social democratic politician, Silva Šimcová was forced to flee Czechoslovakia with her family in 1949. She recounted her dramatic escape in an interview with Ian Willoughby.
Silva Šimcová was 18 when her father, a social democrat politician, told her the family had to escape from Czechoslovakia. It was 1949, a year after the communists had taken power. The young Silva insisted that her fiancé, whom she'd met through her beloved scouts only 6 months earlier, come with them. And remarkably, almost 70 years later, she and her husband, a composer and broadcaster who goes by the name Karel Janovitsky, are still together. When I visited their cosy home in North London, I first asked Mrs. Šimcová about her memories of wartime Prague.
My father was active in the underground, and my parents were offering hospitality to Ervína Brokešová, whose husband was in prison. And I used to listen to their conversations, so I followed what was actually happening in the underground. Although they didn't realize that I was doing it. It was extremely dangerous.
Your father, you were telling me earlier, was a Social Democrat MP. He was in the National Assembly in the post-war period, before the communist takeover. What do you remember about the atmosphere in Prague in that period between the end of the war and the communist takeover?
At the end of the war, people of my generation thought it was like in fairy tales. It was the end of all evil, and everything was going to be happy and good for the rest of the time. And that's what I lived for. And I became very active in all kinds of activities.
And how long was it between the communist takeover and when your parents decided to leave Czechoslovakia?
The communist takeover was in February 48, and we left in October 1949. My father was a great political optimist, and he had friends in the West, and he was hoping that the West would not leave us in the situation. So instead of going away immediately, he was trying to establish awareness in the West about what's happening in Czechoslovakia and hoping for help. Eventually, by the end of August of 1949, somebody told him that the communists had a list of social democrats who were going to be eventually arrested, and his name was on it. So we had to go.
How was it for you as a teenage girl? Your parents tell you, we're leaving. What was your reaction?
Utter shock, because I have known my future husband for half a year by then, and it was a really great love, and I was absolutely devastated. But my parents noticed that, and my father, who was a remarkable man, said, well, if he wants to come with us, he can, if his parents agree. And because his own father was dismissed from the Plzeň Opera, he was an opera singer, and my future husband himself had difficulties in getting to study. He is a year older than me. It was a very good thing. And so he joined us and went also into exile.
Tell us about how you escaped from Czechoslovakia to the West.
We walked from 7 in the evening until 7 in the morning. There were 5 of us. There was Stanislav Koutník, my father's assistant at the university, who organized the whole thing. And we were divided into he and my husband, and then my father, my mother, and myself. And we walked for 12 hours. And that was it.
But were there guards? Were there dogs? Was there a, I don't know, barbed wire fence or anything like that?
Yes. The person who took us across the frontier, both groups, is a remarkable man. And I have always tried to find out who he was. I asked some historians in 1990, could he be traced? But they told me it was too late, which is a pity, because in some writings they had a bad image, and this man was a very remarkable person. He was extremely careful and discreet. He never told us his name. He obviously must have had a permit to go into the Tachov area near the border. Near the border there was a part where people could still go who had a permit. So he drove us by car. We were stopped on the way more than once. He must have had the right documentation, including us, or they knew what he was doing. I will never know that. And then we came to the edge of the wood near Tachov, and we entered the wood and crossed the Šumava there.
Were you afraid making that border crossing, especially given that your party was divided into two groups and you didn't perhaps know where the other group was at that time?
The main fear was what would happen if both groups did not cross. But luckily, because we were the second group, we knew that they did, because the man who took us across the frontier told us that they are all right. The other fear, would we caught ourselves? It's a very strange thing when you are in a situation like that. I don't think there was fear. The fear was all the weeks before, while I was waiting for it to happen. But once it's happening, all you think about is survival. And you just put one foot forward, the other foot forward, and no room for fear. But the fear came afterwards. For years, I suffered from various feelings of fear about silly things, like my father wasn't coming home at the time when he should, and that was in London, and I would worry what happened to him. It was these sort of fears. Somehow, the fear transferred itself into my life. I don't think I have it now. But now I am 86.
You and your family eventually came here to the UK. Tell us about your early days of living in Great Britain.
We arrived just before Christmas 1950. My mother met us at Liverpool Street Station. So my first impression of England was Liverpool Street Station. I didn't somehow notice when we got off the boat. That didn't impress me so much. I was just happy that I put my feet on the soil here. And then we spent the Christmas with my parents in Cambridge. And then for several months, my husband went to the college where he was studying music. And I was looking for an opportunity to get a job. And I was improving my English, which was very poor. And it took about 3 months before I managed to get a job and a work permit.
Your husband, Bohush Shimsa, is a music composer. He has also been a radio broadcaster, but he's also known as Karel Janovitsky. Why is that?
That is because his name was identical with the name of his father. And about a year after studying, when his compositions began to be played at various occasions, he realized that his father's life could be endangered if it was under his real name. And so he decided he would choose a new artistic name, and that is Karel Janovitsky.
And he also used that name when he broadcast for the Czechoslovak service of the BBC.
That was another reason why it was convenient to have another name.
Did you know a lot of people from the Czechoslovak service at the BBC? And what kind of a bunch of people were they?
I like them very much. We had a problem in our relationship to the Czechs living in England at the time. We couldn't tell which of them collaborated with the communists and which of them did not. And the best way to avoid any unhappiness was to avoid them altogether. But when it came to the people in the BBC, I trusted them. So did Karel.
I'm interested that you call your husband Karel, not Bohuš. Why is that?
Because he changed his name. I never know which name to use when I'm talking to somebody. And I thought perhaps you knew him as Karel.
But at home you call him Bohuš.
I call him Jovis. That is his scout nickname.
He was also a scout?
He was also a scout, yes. That's how we met.
During all these years between 1948 and 1989, how closely did you and your husband follow events in Czechoslovakia?
Very closely, because he worked in the BBC, so he had to know everything. He had to read Rudé právo. He had a compulsory one day of reading of Rudé právo a week, I think. And I followed it too through the newspapers. And we had some correspondence, which was sort of semi-legal, and which was about neutral things. But we knew about children who were born and people who died and things like that. No political things through the correspondence. We also met some visitors, because in 68 there was a lot of Czechs who were making up their mind whether to go back or not. That was such a dreadful time for us too. I'll tell you a secret what I did. I used to cry every morning for 5 minutes. I would come to work, put a watch in front of me and say to myself, now, you can cry for 5 minutes and that's enough for the day. It was so bad. It was so bad. Because my timetable as a lecturer was very flexible, I worked for a while as a translator for Czech students. So I met a lot of people, not people whom I knew or who were recommended to me from Czechia, but people, students who were just passing through. And the stories of those really, to this day, they weigh on me greatly. Some of them stayed, some of them went back. Which of them were happier is hard to say.
Tell us about the first time you and your husband returned to Prague after 1989, and I presume after many decades.
That is strange. I feel emptiness, utter emptiness. I remember when the plane was nearing the ground, and I thought, now this is it. Then I remember the people who were waiting for me, because there was a group of people, including a baby in a pram. It was marvelous. And then they took me to the flat where I was going to stay with my friends, and everybody was there. I was completely knocked out by it all. And then I had a program which I arranged by correspondence, and I visited 3 places a day. I spent 3 weeks there, and I visited 3 places a day. I found that if I planned 4, I started feeling ill.
Given the fact that both you and your husband are Czechs, did you consider relocating back to Prague?
No. You cannot transplant a tree more than once. If the chance to go back was after 1 year, fine. But after 40 years living in a country, you really have roots. Some of my friends who used to live here decided to go back for retirement. I don't think that's a good idea. At least it wouldn't be for me. On return, we loved it all, but we realized we could not live there. We didn't have the skills. We didn't have the basic skills of living there. The ethical standards, well, I suppose if I lived for 40 years under such terrible regime, I would also look after my own interests rather than ethical principles. So I do not criticize, but I realized I couldn't live there.
You know, for me, the most incredible thing about your story is that you met your husband. You were together for 6 months only before you left together from Czechoslovakia. And now you're still here together nearly 70 years later.
Because he is a remarkable man. That's very simple.
Otherwise, what's the secret of such a long-lasting relationship, if you don't mind me asking?
It's difficult. In fact, I have just written a book. And I hope it will be published by the spring. And it is called Láska v exilu 1949 až 50. Love in Exile. And it is based on our diaries and correspondence from our years in the refugee camps. And maybe when you read that book, you will understand a little bit about how it works.
And that was Silva Šimsová, speaking to Ian Willoughby in an interview that was first broadcast in February of this year. Sadly, that brings us to the end of our programme here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.